All right, continuing our look at Unit 6. Last week we looked at the different persons, the materialistic persons who have no taste or qualification for hearing and chanting about the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we looked at the process for approaching the Srimad Bhagavatam with the proper qualifications, and we were looking at different sections from the first chapter, and some from the second, some from the third, and even some from the seventh chapter. And today we're going to look at by the end of today's session, what we want our students to be able to do is, as far as to develop the preaching application or preaching ability, to explain how Astanga Yoga and meditation on the Virata Rupa can be preliminary processes for progressing to bhakti. And so you remember I gave you a handout sheet the other day. So I've made a few adjustments to that, not many. So you see at the very top there, everyone got that sheet? Yeah. And then we'll also explain the process of leaving the body through the mystic yoga and the three types of perfection. And that's from the second canto. The second chapter. Whereas the first one was from the first chapter. And we also want to be able to summarise the descriptions and discuss the relevance of the Virata Rupa. There was a couple of topics on demigod worship. I decided to leave that until the next lesson. So we're also going to present the principles of Bhagavad Dharma, devotional service in a contemporary context. And one thing which was not mentioned, which I thought is very important to include in this lesson, is in answering Prigit Maharaj's question at the end of the 19th chapter, the first canto, show the way of perfection for all persons and especially for one who is about to die, text 37, we want to summarise Sukadeva Goswami's main points. And he comes to the conclusion that all methods lead to bhakti yoga. And that's coming right at the end of the second chapter, especially verses 32 to 37. So just briefly, what we're looking at is, first we're going to look at basically what is worship of the Virat Rupa and what is the worship or meditation on the Paramatma. Alright, there are two distinct processes we're going to look at here. And we're also going to look at the third one is Bhagavad Dharma or devotional service. Devotional service, and specifically the nine processes of devotional service, with an emphasis on hearing and chanting and meditating upon the Supreme Lord. One of the ways we'll look at that is, you know, what actually is the Virata Rupa? You know, what is the description of the super soul? And then we'll actually look at the processes in relationship to those two objects of worship or meditation. Chapter, let's link some of our Mostly we'll be dealing with the first and second chapters. Let's have a look at the second chapter. And in the chapter 1, we know that Sukadeva Goswami stressed meditation on the personality of Godhead through sound vibration while fixing the mind on the spiritual form of the Lord. That's what he stressed, above other things. Now, for those who are materially encumbered, he suggested a gradual process of purifying the mind, elevating to the stage of understanding that the Lord is a transcendental person. Now, so he suggested, one, straight out, especially in text number 5 of the first chapter, you know, what one should actually do. Always hear, chant, and glorify about the Supreme Lord. Now, for those who are unable to do that, he suggests a process of the Astanga Yoga process, eightfold process of yoga, which actually fixes the mind upon the Paramatma. Now, because as a preliminary process for that, that if one is unable to actually even accommodate the personal form of the Lord as the Paramatma, one may, you know, have an impersonal conception, you know, that the Lord doesn't have a personal form beyond, you know, that beyond the material creation, where personal forms are manifest. Some people believe that the personal forms of the Lord that manifest within the material creation are material creations, and that beyond the material creation, the Lord is only an impersonal, you know, spiritual energy. Right? For those, of course, therefore, there's a preliminary process again to meditate upon the Virata Rupa. So at least they're meditating upon the Lord. It is gradually going to help them to conceive of the Lord. They're being purified. It actually cleanses the modes of passion and ignorance from their mind. And by that, it actually brings them to the point where they may be able to fix their mind in meditation properly. And then fixing their mind in meditation with a slight inclination towards understanding the personality, they may be able to fix their mind on the Paramatma. Uh-huh. Now, at the end of chapter 1, we saw that in verse 39, we see that Sukadeva Goswami gave a warning for the yogi, you know, not to fall again into the trap of becoming a material enjoyer. There are many powers that come from any process of meditation and yoga. And, you know, there's a specific warning that enjoying those powers is not the goal, and in fact, it can be a backward step. It means that one's process of yoga and meditation becomes a failure if one just, again, tries to enjoy the material world but just on a higher platform. One will be, you know, it's very dangerous. So, as we come into the second chapter, therefore, Sukadeva Goswami, you know, thoroughly condemns persons with a materialistic mentality, whether they be yogis or complete materialists. And practically in answer to Prigit Maharaj's question, in 37 and 38 of the first chapter as to what one should not be thinking about, hearing about and chanting about. Sukadeva Goswami is explaining that either for the materialists or for those who are trying to progress on the path of self-realization, they should not be meditating, you know, just absorbed in material things. Whether they be the facilities which are coming through their yoga process, or whether they just be gross, you know, sense gratification. Okay. Now, before we discuss the actual processes, the different processes, basically meditation on the Virata Rupa, meditation on the Paramatma, or, you know, Bhagavat Dham, hearing and chanting, let's look at, you know, what is the Paramatma, what is the Virata Rupa, you know, what are the objects of these processes. So, so we're going to look at the descriptions of the Virata Rupa. Now, they have been described from about, from exactly the first chapter from the second canto, and we can look at text 23 and goes through to 38 in particular. We'll just look briefly at the descriptions of the Virata Rupa. So we see in text 23 of the first chapter, Sukadeva Goswami explains that once you control the sitting posture, regulate the breathing process by the yogic pranayama, and thus control the mind and senses, and with intelligence apply the mind to the gross potencies of the Lord called the Virata Rupa. So then, those verses right through to verse 38, we see in verse 24, this gigantic manifestation of the phenomenal material world as a whole is the personal body of the Absolute Truth, wherein the universal resultant past, present and future of material time is experienced. We may remember that when Krishna showed his universal form to Arjuna, and in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, after seeing that universal form, Arjuna asked Krishna who he was, and he replied that, "I am time." So this gigantic manifestation of the phenomenal material world shows the results of time, past, present and future, in this material universe. Now, some of the verses, so we're looking basically at the first chapter, but there are some verses in the fifth chapter, verses 35 to 42, and some in the sixth chapter, verses 1 to 17. And actually, if you compare them, you'll see that they are adding or just giving a little bit more information about exactly what is stated in this first chapter.
What chapter is
it? In the fifth chapter, verses 35 to 42, and then the sixth chapter, verses 1 to 17. So, for instance, in the fifth chapter, verse 35, it describes that Lord Mahavishnu, although lying in the causal ocean, came out of it, and dividing himself as Hiranyagarbha, he entered into each universe and assumed the Virat Rupa, with thousands of legs, arms, mouths, heads, etc. So there we see that Mahavishnu divides himself as a Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbha is, we discussed last week, is the sum total of all the jivas, living entities, who are within one universe, is in essence becomes the subtle body of the Virat Rupa. So it's not wrong to say that the universal form, you know, is an expansion from Mahavishnu, because literally, one of the things that's very interesting is that in one of Srila Prabhupada's purports, he describes that the description is not the complete Virata Rupa. Because if we consider here that Mahavishnu manifests as the Virata Rupa, that means actually the total Virata Rupa is his expansion in every universe. So if we see one universal form in one particular universe, that's only a small portion of the total universal manifestation of Mahavishnu. Because he is dividing himself as the Virata Rupa in each and every universe. And therefore, you know, you see in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna said to Arjuna that no one before you has ever seen this Virata Rupa. So there may be different manifestations. You know, it's quite unlimited. Naturally, what Krishna showed Arjuna was quite significant. Although it's understood that Duryodhana also saw a Virata Rupa, but that was quite partial compared to what he actually showed Arjuna. Okay. There's two parts of this discussion. One is, what is the Virat Rupa? Just the description in general. That's what we're doing now. Your question is more on the relevance of the Virata Rupa, and we'll get to that in a later part. I don't want to get too intricate in this part. Just a general description. I'll just give a few little details, but hold that question. If I don't answer it, come back to it, but I'm sure we'll cover it when we're going to discuss a little bit more in depth about it. Now, it's just, we just want to get an understanding of the general description of Virata Rupa. So, you know, in essence, the Hiranyagarbha, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, can also be known as Hiranyagarbha, because literally from him, in each universe, comes the, you know, within the lotus stem, the sum total of all living entities within that one universe. And that manifests from him. So he can also be, you know, called the Hiranyagarbha, or the source of the Hiranyagarbha, and Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. Similarly, it's not wrong to call any of those three, you know, aspects of Vishnu as Hiranyagarbha. And also, you know, the golden lotus which grows from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu's navel can also be called Hiranyagarbha. in essence, it is non-different from Vishnu, but it's where he expands as the sum total of living entities. In the case of Mahavishnu, of course, it would be, you know, all living entities which are going into each and every universe. In the case of Garbhadaksha Vishnu, it is, you know, the living entities, you know, within one universe. And Shivadaksha Vishnu, similarly, is actually the actual self of all living entities, or the super self is the actual soul of all living entities. So he himself is, you know, the sum total of being the super soul of each and every living entity. So, getting back to chapter 1. Now, this gigantic manifestation of the phenomenal material world as a whole is the personal body of the Absolute Truth. So here, partially answering your question there, it is saying it's the personal body of the Absolute Truth wherein the resultant universal past, present, future of material time is experienced. Right, so we read that. Verse 25. The gigantic universal form of the personality of Godhead within the body of the universal shell, which is covered by sevenfold material elements, is the subject of Virata conception. Right, so everything within the shell of the sevenfold material elements is the Virata Rupa form of the Lord, universal form of the Lord. And then we understand that you know, the great philosophers imagine that the complete planetary systems of the universe are displays of the upper and lower limbs of the universal body of the Lord. So now we begin to discuss the actual limbs of the universal body. That quote was from chapter 5, verse 36. And so there are similar quotes in chapters 5 and 1 describing here about a description of the way the different planetary systems are situated. If we look at in chapter 5, verse 38, it describes that the lower planetary systems up to the limit of the earthly stratum are said to be situated in his legs. The middle planetary systems beginning from Bhuvaloka are situated in his navel. And the highest, still higher planetary systems occupy the demigods and highly cultured sages and saints are situated in the chest of the Lord. And then verse 39 in the fifth chapter, that from the forefront of the chest up to the neck of the universal form of the Lord are situated the planetary systems named Janaloka and Tapaloka, where Satyaloka, the topmost planetary situated system, is situated on the head of the form. The spiritual planets, however, are eternal. So just within the universal form, as described in the first chapter, the fifth chapter, it's either divided into three. The universe is divided into three, lower, middle, upper, or 14. The seven below are the planets such as, you know, Atala, Vitala, Satala, Tala, Tala, Maha, Tala, Rasa, Tala, Patala. Right? Now, they're the lower planetary systems. Now, above them, just above them, is the Earth planetary system, which is Bhuloka. So, in essence, Bhūloka is part of the lower planetary systems. It's the topmost part of the lower planetary systems, Bhūloka. The middle planetary systems, Bhūvaloka, and then the higher planetary systems up to Satyaloka, Brahmaloka, are called Svaloka. Om Bhūvaha Svaha. Yes.
Including Bhūloka.
Including Earth.
Earth, which is Bhūloka.
And after that is which one?
After that is Bhūvaloka.
Bhūvaloka. Oh, they're different. Yeah, there's Bhūloka. Bhūloka is sometimes spelled B-H-U-R and sometimes spelled B-H-U-H. Right? Bhūloka. That's the lower. And then Bhūva, with the V, is the middle. And then Svaloka is the upper, going all the way up to Brahmaloka.
That's if you have three.
And then just consider that if you take 14, that those seven below the earth are seven, and then from the earth up to Brahmaloka are the other seven. In which case you'd say, if you said the seven, so they're the seven below. If you said the seven above, you'd say Bho, Bhavaha, Sva, Maha, Janas, Tapas, Satya. See? They're the seven above. Bhūpa, Vaha, Sva, Maha, Janas, Tapa, Satya. You won't have to remember what I said this stage. Oh, that's good. They're in the purports. That's okay. You don't have to. Okay. So then it describes, for instance, we go back to chapter 1, verse 35, that the clouds which carry the water are the hairs on his head. The terminations of days and nights are his dress at sunset, sunrise. The supreme cause of material creation is his intelligence. His mind is the moon, the reservoir of all changes. Next verse, the principle of matter, Mahatattva, is his consciousness. Rudradev is his ego. And various animals and what have you are situated within the belt of the Lord. Do we have? Let us see. Have a quick flip. There's one in the shop. Evidently, there's one in the shop. Yeah, that's what they're saying. There may be a poster or something. Yeah.
But not like which ones are in his legs and in the upper, where are they as in his body? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're drawn. No, I don't know that I've seen one that's really well drawn with explaining everything. But you know, that's a universal form. But It's very difficult to actually see there from that picture what we're seeing here. Which one? That's one of the things I was going to get you to do, is actually give you some paper and get you to draw it, but it'd take a whole lesson, so I didn't. We see varieties of birds are indication of his masterful artistic sense. Manu, the emblem of his intelligence. Humanity, his residence. The celestial species of human beings, like Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Charanas, represent his musical rhythm, and the demoniac soldiers are representations of his wonderful prowess. The brahmanas are his face, chatras his arms, vaishyas his thighs, sudras his feet. Some of the things you stated in the fifth chapter. So we see there that Sukadeva Goswami explains that, you know, one who is seriously desiring liberation concentrates his mind on this form of the Lord. And if one does not do that, one will be misled and degraded. In other words, you know, this is a purifying process, and if one doesn't, one way or another, fix his mind on the Lord, the person cannot be purified. In the descriptions in the sixth chapter also, verses 13 to 16, describe that, you know, everybody is within, you know, they're all part of this universal form. Brahma is actually describing that to Narada, that he's within the universal form, everyone, right down to the lowest living entities, past, present, future, they're all within that. There's no one who's not within it. And at the end of that verse, he describes that they're all covered by the universal form of the Lord at all times, namely past, present, future. Although he is transcendental to all of them, eternally existing in a form not exceeding 9 inches. So we see there that, in essence, you know, the potencies of the super soul are manifesting the whole universal form, and yet the super soul can remain, you know, 8 or 9 inches seated within the heart. So that's just a brief description. We'll look at that, the significance of the Virata Rupa, in a little bit more depth. Now let's just look at a description of the Paramatma or Super Soul. So these are two different objects, two different aspects of the personality of Godhead for meditation and, you know, those who are more elevated will actually meditate upon the Paramatma, the Super Soul. And those who tend to have a little bit more of an impersonal or materialistic bent of mind are unable to do that, fix their mind on the Super Soul. They lack the faith and the purity of mind, and therefore for them the Virata Rupa is helpful to help them come to this stage. So in chapter 2, verses 8 to 12, there is a description of the super soul. So we'll just go over that. Others conceive of the personality of Godhead residing within the body in the region of the heart and measuring only 8 inches, with 4 hands carrying a lotus, a wheel and of a chariot, a conch shell and a club respectively. Chapter 2, starting with text 8 to 12. So, you know, of course, keeping in mind that the Lord is situated within the heart, measuring, you know, the basically it's called one Pradesh, or, you know, the actual dimension of the heart, which is about, as Prabhupada describes, so it's about 8 inches, 8 or 9 inches. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out, according to the verses of the Bhagavatam, that although we have to also understand that he's actually the size of a 15-year-old person at the same time. The super soul. Very same time. Right? Though he is in that size, by his inconceivable energy, he has the form of a man 15 years old. You know, it's interesting, you know, perspective. Who's ever seen when the moon comes up and looks really, really big? Yeah? You saw that? Was it bigger than usual?
Yes, it was.
It was. You know, if you actually hold a pencil up to the moon, you'll find it never changes its size. It's always the same size. So when it appears really big, if you hold your pencil, you see it takes up the same amount of space. And when it appears to be very small, it takes up the same amount. It does not actually change. Yeah. It's our perception. Yeah. It takes up exactly the same. It does not ever. Yeah. It is all just perception. So similarly, the Lord, you know, although he has a form situated within the heart, and the heart has a dimension of about 8, you know, the size of the heart. So, from what I understand from Srila Prabhupada's statements, of course, is that therefore, you know, within the size of an ant, he's also about, you know, that heart size, you know. But either way, whether to an ant or to us, where he's, you know, the size of about the heart's dimension, he's, you know, 15 years old in his form at the same time. One super soul in every he expands within the heart. So within your heart, if you could look, you could see that yes, he's there. And if you could see within my heart, you would see yes, he's also sitting there. He hasn't left anyone out. Yes. No. You see the next verse, he's taking up the dimension of their heart. Right? But at the same time, he doesn't lose his form as a 15-year-old person. Yeah, 8 to 9 inches.
For a human being?
Yeah.
But for
Yeah, so in the purple, Prabhupada says the measurement of the localized personality of Godhead is estimated to expand from the ring finger to the end of the thumb, more or less 8 inches. So it's about, you know, so sometimes, it, you know, you hear Prabhupada just say, you know, it's about the size of the thumb. Just very quick analysis. So for an ant, he's about the size of an ant's thumb. Whether ants have thumbs, I don't know. But, you know, if they did have a thumb, that's how big it would be. But he doesn't leave his, he doesn't lose his inconceivable form as being 15 years old. Yes. And he still remains, he still keeps his form. In verse 9 we see that his mouth expresses his happiness, his eyes spread like lotus petals. Vishwanath Chakrabarti of the course is like blue lotus petals. His garments yellowish like the saffron of a Kadamba flower, bedecked with valuable jewels, ornaments made of gold, set with jewels. He wears a glowing headdress and earrings. His lotus feet are placed over the whorls of the lotus hearts of great mystics. So, meditating, in essence, on the super soul, we can meditate that his lotus feet, of course, are placed within our heart, but we can also meditate that his lotus feet are placed upon the hearts of other great souls, which can also be part of our meditation. On his chest, he's got the Kastuba jewel engraved with a beautiful calf, other jewels on his shoulders. His complete torso is garlanded with fresh flowers. So he's garlanded with he has a garland that never fades. As Prabhupada mentions in the purport that, you know, all these ornaments and clothing and flowers on the body of the Lord, they're identical with the body of the Lord. None of them are made of material ingredients. Now, there's also the mark of Lakshmi. There's a golden line on the chest of the Lord. He has well decorated with an ornamental wreath about his waist, rings studded with jewels on his fingers, leglets, bangles, oiled hair curling with a bluish tint, beautiful smiling face, very pleasing. So yeah, in this way we're meditating upon the Supreme Lord, who is the most beautiful person amongst all others. Verse 12, the Lord's magnanimous pastimes and the glowing glancing of his smiling face are all indications of his extensive benedictions. The Lord's magnanimous pastimes and the glowing glancing of his smiling face. So Vishwanath Chakrabarti at the Gaur puts it this way, that you know, he has a playful smiling glance. And the movement of his eye, shining eyebrows. His magnanimous pastimes, you know, his the features of his face, the movements, his smile and his movements of his eyebrows, indicating his merciful pastime of benedicting the spirit soul. So in this way, we've had a just a brief look at what is the object of meditation of the Virata Rupa, and what is the object of meditation of Paramatma or the Rupa Soul. Now, what we're going to look at is this Astanga Yoga process, eightfold process of yoga. Which is a meditation on the meditation on the Virata Rupa, meditation on the Paramatma and this Bhagavad Dham or devotional service. So now we're looking at the three different processes. Astanga Yoga meditation can either be on the Virat Rupa or the Paramatma. Each must have an element of bhakti in order to get make any advancement or to have any success. Whereas Bhagavad Dham is based upon just pure bhakti without any activities of karma or jnana or yoga. Ashtanga
Yoga should have some bhakti, and what else?
Ashtanga Yoga should meditate upon the super soul. If the person, and they should practice, Ashtanga Yoga helps them to meditate on the super soul. If they're not qualified to meditate upon the super soul, they should meditate upon the Virat Rupa to become qualified by purifying the mind. Either way, they're practicing Ashtanga Yoga at a higher or lower level, and that Ashtanga Yoga must have an element of bhakti in order for them to get some success. Okay, now, of course, while we're discussing this, we'll look a little bit more about the particular relevance of the Virat Rupa in regard to this Ashtanga Yoga process. And, you know, we'll also look at how Ashtanga Yoga and meditation on the Virata Rupa can be and should be preliminary processes which lead to bhakti. Right, so we're going to look at Ashtanga Yoga, and we're going to look at how it's a preliminary process to bhakti, should be. And, you know, where, therefore, the significance of the Virata Rupa or the Paramatma objects of meditation fit in. Ultimately, what we're going to look at is... our conclusion will be that in the first chapter, Sukadeva Goswami answered to some degree initially to Maharaj's question at the end of the 19th chapter, and he explained that one should take bhakti, that means one should hear and chant and glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Alright? So we have to keep in mind that our discussion, in essence, is going to lead up to the point where Sukadeva Goswami will say that, therefore, you should hear about, he'll say it again, in fact. As we look at these processes, we'll see that they have some merit. But ultimately, if we look at the process of bhakti, we're better off just to directly take the bhakti. That's the ultimate conclusion we're coming towards. And we'll discuss that. In other words, Sukadeva Goswami, in this whole, you know, going through the second chapter here, where he may have explained it, you know, a little bit more in some of the other chapters as well, but basically, the second chapter, he's made a statement about bhakti, and ultimately he's going to show that whatever processes are given in the Vedas for liberation or for perfection, I'm going to tell you those processes, and then at the end I'm going to tell you that the Vedas are saying what I said to you originally, that still you're better off to take the bhakti, which is also the, you know, the key message of the Vedas. So this is where this conversation is. So now the first part to do this, what we'll do is we'll actually look at the Purva Svadvaya question for chapter 2 for chapter 1 sorry, question 6, which asks us to briefly describe the process of detachment recommended by Sukadeva Goswami in chapter 1, verses 14 to 19. So it was actually in chapter 1. I think I said chapter 2 before. It was actually in chapter 1. You remember that. First of all, Sukadeva Goswami described Hare Krishna that, you know, one should not be materially engrossed. Whether one's a materialist or one trying to be attain yogi perfection, for either of them, it is a waste of time. Better off to be hearing and chanting about the glories of the Lord. That's his statement. Then he comes into this conversation we're about to start now. He's going to describe this process of detachment. In verse 14 of the first chapter, he says to Parikshit Maharaj, "Now your duration of life is limited to 7 more days. During this time you can perform all those rituals which are needed for the best purpose of your life." In essence, Sukadeva Goswami has actually told him previously that the best thing is to hear and chant. And by saying that he's got 7 days, that seems like the best option. In verse 15, at the last stage of one's life, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death, but one must cut off all attachment to the material body and everything pertaining to it, and all desires thereof. Right. We have to consider that there are many different sages present at this great meeting, and that many of those different sages are great yogis, and it is their opinion that Parikshit Maharaj should be following a process of yoga for liberation. As we will see, that Sukadeva Goswami is going to convince them that Parikshit Maharaj doesn't necessarily need to follow a process of looking for liberation. He's better off to follow a process which gives prema, where liberation is automatically achieved as a side benefit, and that Sukadeva Goswami wants to convince him that the easiest, the best, the most fearless, the most authorized, the most recommended process is bhakti. In order to do that, he's got to comparatively compare the other processes. So this is what he's doing. Therefore, at the end of this chapter, Sukadeva Goswami will give his personal opinion again. In verse 39, he will say, one should concentrate his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's, he will say that at the end, but he's going to convince everyone in the meantime by going through the processes that are recommended in the Vedas and showing their strengths and weaknesses and benefits. All right. Now, so some points which are significant for our Purva Svadhyaya question as to briefly describe the process of detachment recommended by Sukadeva Goswami. We have to understand that one must cut off all attachment to the material body and everything pertaining to it. So that's an essential element that should be noted here for answering that Purva Svadhyaya question. Just keep that in mind. There are a few selected points you want to jot down to answer that question, and at the same time we're looking at this process in general. And the Purport, Prabhupada also says one must develop the desires for returning back home, back to Godhead. And he says that's done by transferring our desires from matter, from, the service of Satan, he says, to the service of the Lord. Yeah, in verse 16, one should leave home and practice self-control. In a sacred place, he should bathe regularly and sit down in a lonely place, duly sanctified. So this is all part of preparing for the better next life. Holy places or sacred places are very important for this. Practicing celibacy, sitting in a purified, sanctified place. All of these things in order to help drag the mind from material engagements, Prabhupada says in the purport, and to fix it on the lotus feet of the Lord. And for us, of course, Prabhupada says that, we would apply this by sitting down and chanting without offence. Now, in essence, these, for one who's very familiar with the Ashtanga Yoga process, you have Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama. What else do we have? Pratyahara, Dharana, Samadhi, Jhana Samadhi. Right. Yama Niyama, the do's and don'ts. Here, self-control or brahmachari would be Yama. Bathing in holy rivers. Niyama, asana, sitting in a nice place, pranayama, breathing pranayama. So, these different levels of Ashtanga Yoga are situated within those processes. So one should make the mind remember the three letters Om, regulate the breathing, control the mind so as not to forget the transcendental seed. Prabhupada makes some significant points. This is a way of changing the habit of the mind. Developing a desire to function for spiritual realization. If we do that, change the function of the mind, the senses will automatically change. In verse 18, gradually as the mind becomes progressively spiritualized, withdraw it from sense activities, and by intelligence, the senses will be controlled. The mind, too absorbed in material activities, can be engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead and become fixed in full transcendental consciousness. So, you know, pratyahara is that process of withdrawing the senses from their objects. Concentrating the mind with intelligence, that's dharana. Prabhupada mentions in the purport, you know, the ultimate stage of this pranayama system is actually to fix the mind on the personality of Godhead. So one should always keep that in mind. Now in verse 19 it says, thereafter one should meditate upon the limbs of Vishnu one after another, without being deviated from the conception of the complete body, thus the mind becomes free from all sense objects. There should be no other thing to be thought upon because the personality of God of Vishnu is the ultimate truth. Prabhupada does mention in the purports that, of course, you know, we just described the super soul, the paramatma sitting within the heart. Prabhupada also mentions, of course, that you know, one can meditate upon the limbs of Vishnu within the temple. It is exactly the same effect, although it's a lot easier. Especially for a neophyte. Meditation, of course, jhana, is a more complete steadiness of the mind that's produced when one concentrates on the limbs of the Lord with uninterrupted consciousness. That's jhana. When one comes to the point where there's actually nothing else in one's mind except that fixed meditation upon the Lord, of course that's samadhi. As long as there's anything else there, then samadhi is not there. So basically jhana is confining the mind to one place. And it particularly, it should be the form of the Lord. So, we've done two things there. One, we've answered one of our important Purva Svadhyaya questions, number 6, for the first chapter. We described the process of detachment. We've also looked at the Stanga Yoga, which can be applied to either the Paramatma or the Virata Rupa. So now, we're going to look at here, Sukadeva Goswami begins to describe for those who find it difficult to actually follow his instructions there, in fixing the mind on the super soul, the personality of Godhead, that that for them they can fix the mind on the Virat Rupa. So this discussion now comes into, you know, what is how this Virat Rupa is a preliminary process. It's preliminary for Ashtanga Yoga, and of course Ashtanga Yoga is preliminary for Bhakti. Well, you know, the jnani should come to the point of understanding what is what. That this is material and it should not be thought about, should not be part of our consciousness, should not be part of our activities. This is spiritual and it should be part of our consciousness and should be part of our activities in relation there. That's where the jnanis come to that point. From that point they then have to then put into practice that knowledge, and therefore they can fix their mind upon the Lord. Or if they're not qualified to fix their mind upon the Paramatma or the deities in the temple of Bhagavan, it's recommended that they fix their mind upon the Virata Rupa. And that's what we're going to look at now.
I met a person that thinks he's doing this ground for the temples.
That means he doesn't have knowledge. Okay, so what we're going to do is look at there are a couple of verses in this first chapter, verses 14, 15, which sort of look at this chapter 1, which is looking at those on the borderline, you see, as we go on. Now, in the purport to verse 14, Prabhupada is saying that Sukadeva Goswami has told Pariksit Maharaj that he should take shelter of the sound representation of the Lord for the last 7 days of his life to achieve perfection. He's saying that it's not a formal ritual, but there are some favourable conditions which can help us to qualify to do that. This is what we're Sukadevi Goswami is describing, that many people just can't do that, and so he's going to list some of the favourable things which will get him to that point. We're looking at all of these verses, even some other points from the ones that we've covered, even back as far as 14. We've got up to verse 19. that Purva Svajaya question asked to look at verses 14 to 19, because that is Sukadeva Goswami's description of the initial process of detachment. But we're going right through to basically the end of the chapter, because there is more information about how it relates to Virata Rupa and how these processes become preliminary for bhakti. For instance, how we can see their preliminary processes, which are very important, in verse 16, in the purpose describing, as long as one is materially attached, one cannot understand spiritual freedom. The illusory material energy of matter is so strong that one is apt to be under such illusion at every stage of life, even after quitting one's home, happy home. Therefore, is it essential that one practice self-control by celibacy? So we see how, you know, Sukadeva Goswami has said, just fix your mind on chanting, you know, the name form, pastimes of the Supreme Lord. And by that you attain all perfection. If someone tried to follow Sukadeva Goswami's advice, and perhaps, you know, they were, you know, 50 or 60 years old, and they decided, I'll leave home and travel to the sacred places. If they don't incorporate some of these preliminary processes, into their sadhana, they won't be able to fix their mind. In verse 17, Prabhupada says that omkara is the seed of transcendental realization. It's doing that with the breathing exercise is a mechanical way of getting into trance. It's a way of getting the material mind, which is materially absorbed, under control. So this is the way of changing the habit. It's only transcendental sound which can bring about the desired change of the mind and the senses. He gives an example. Even a mentally deranged man can be cured by treatment of transcendental sound, because the Lord's holy name is non-different from the Lord, and so is omkara. Of course, Sukadeva Goswami has said, chant the holy name. But for persons who are unable to realize transcendental form or name of the Lord, the neophytes, they're trained to practice by this mechanical process. So here we see how it's a preliminary process, which is helpful to follow Sukadeva Goswami's ultimate instruction. So Sukadeva Goswami says, chant the holy name of the Lord. People don't have any faith in the Lord as a person. So, okay, you still have to purify yourself by transcendental sound. So chant on like this. So it's a preliminary process. By purification, they can gradually come to the point of chanting the holy name. But it's helpful. The people without that faith cannot sit down and chant Hare Krishna. Because they have no faith in the holy name, the Lord as a person. They'll be chanting Krishna and thinking, but you say to them, you must chant some, you must control the mind with sound vibration. So then chant on, always on. That they can understand, because they have a impersonal meaning. So their preliminary processes, which are essential to bring us to what the Vedas really want us to do. If we can't do that immediately. In answer to your question, no, and that's what we're coming to ultimately in this discussion. In fact, here we see in the purport to verse 18, Prabhupada says, the ultimate state of this pranayama system is to fix in trance, samadhi. But experience has proven that even the samadhi stage also fails to control the materially absorbed mind. They may touch upon it but can't remain there. He gives the example of Vishvamrita Muni. You know, there's things that come up from the subconscious, from the previous lives. He was in samadhi. He became a victim of the senses and cohabited with Menaka. This verse, verse 18, is saying, Sukadeva Goswami is saying, description of fixing the mind, of the process of Astanga Yoga, is saying, the mind too materially absorbed, the material activities can be engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead and become fixed in full transcendental consciousness. So he's saying, but really the only way one will stay fixed in samadhi is to fix the mind on the Lord. So this Astanga Yoga brings us to the point where we literally control the mind, bring the mind under control by a mechanical process. One may get to that and even, you know, for some time, just touch upon that samadhi, or, you know, just there's nothing else in the mind but what one is fixed upon. But Sukadeva Goswami is saying that if you really don't fix the mind upon the personality of Godhead, you won't really be able to maintain that. Your materially absorbed mind will actually disturb your samadhi, break your samadhi. Therefore, this is the beginning of his describing the Virata Rupa. For those people who can't maintain, become fixed in samadhi in their Astanga Yoga, therefore they're up to a certain level but they can't quite reach perfection for them. Okay, Virata Rupa. Better they meditate upon the form of the Lord, but if they can't meditate upon the form of the Lord, at least the Virata Rupa form of the Lord. At least it's for those whose minds are so materially conditioned that they do not have the faith to meditate upon a personal form of the Lord, thinking it material, then meditate upon the Virata Rupa. So we're going to gradually look at the significance. You know, what is their mentality and how it actually helps them to bridge this gap where they can complete this final step of Astanga Yoga and actually purify the materially absorbed mind so that they can meditate upon the Lord. Yeah.
So in this case, Vishwamitra has come to
samadhi. Yeah. Right. purport to verse 19, we see Prabhupada make some significant statements on this point, that foolish persons bewildered by the external energy of Vishnu do not know that the ultimate goal of the progressive search after happiness is to get in touch directly with Lord Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. Thinking of Vishnu or meditating upon the transcendental form of Vishnu, specifically on Lord Krishna, is the last word in the subject of meditation. The worship of the deity in the temple of Vishnu is identical with Lord Vishnu by the inconceivable potency of the Lord. Therefore, a neophyte's concentration or meditation upon the limbs of Vishnu in the temple is an easy opportunity for meditation for persons who are unable to sit down tightly at one place and then concentrate upon pranava omkara, or the limbs of the body of Vishnu, as recommended by Sukadeva Goswami. The common man can benefit more by meditating on the form of Vishnu in the temple than on Omkara, the spiritual combination of Om. So that's the answer to your question, Pashila Prabhupada, you joke. Persons acquainted with the absolute truth, persons unacquainted with the science of the absolute truth, try to create dissension by differentiating between forms of Vishnu and that of Omkara. But here we see in this discussion by Sukadeva Goswami that he is indicating that the form of Vishnu is the ultimate goal of meditation. And so he's indicating that in this overall conversation. And it's better to concentrate upon the forms of Vishnu than on Omkara. The latter process is more difficult. You see that an interesting thing too, of course, is that for those who are less and less qualified, the process that they take is actually more difficult. So Sukadeva Goswami says chant Hare Krishna. So for someone who's purified in the mind, they just chant Hare Krishna, very easy. For someone who can't do that, so follow Sangha Yoga, meditate on Vishnu, Paramatma. If you can't do that, meditate, actually better meditate upon, the Lord in the temple. Can't do that, meditate upon, Vishnu. Can't do that, meditate on the universal form, and on, like this. Therefore we see the statement in the Bhagavad Gita that those who have an impersonal conception, their path is very difficult and troublesome. Like that. So they make it hard for themselves. Although they make it hard for themselves by, stubbornly maintaining this materialistic mind and personal conception of the Lord, they have to follow something in order to be purified. Now, in verse 21, very interesting statement here. Sukadeva Goswami says, this system of remembrance and being fixed in the habit of seeing the all-good personal conception of the Lord, one can very soon attain devotional service to the Lord under his direct shelter. So he's saying, basically, if you keep meditating upon the form of the Lord as a person, gradually, as Prabhupada says in the purport, he says, the devotional atmosphere created by pantheistic vision develops into devotional service in later days, and that is the only benefit for the pantheist, for the impersonalist. Remember, we've described pantheism as seeing the Lord as non-different from his material, from everything in the material existence, and therefore within material existence, because we see that there are many different gods, they're all accepted within pantheism, because pantheisms in their lowest impersonal form will see God as non-different from the material world, and therefore all the various gods are part of that material world, and they're all part of God, they're all equally God. Right? So they're all accepted. So you can worship any god, because they're all material anyway, and God is non-different from them. In a higher sense of pantheism, one accepts that the Lord is non-different from his material energy, but at the same time he maintains his original personal transcendental form beyond it. In which case, one is basically monotheistic, worshipping one God, and can still see the material energy as non-different from the God being his energy. So, a devotee can actually accommodate pantheism and monotheism properly. Now, either way, whether one is meditating upon the super soul or whether one is meditating upon the Virata Rupa, if one has some sort of an impersonal conception to some degree or another, by always thinking of God, it does still create a devotional sentiment or attitude or atmosphere within one's heart, within one's life. That the, you know, then with the association of a devotee, that can actually be transformed into devotional service, a desire to take up devotional service. So this is what Sukadeva Goswami is saying. That's the real benefit. Without that, you know, you're wasting your time. Vishwanath Chakravarti declares back to misery yoga. It's yoga, and they may come to have the tiniest little tinge of, you know, their main thing they're doing is yoga, but just due to that tinge of devotion, as we said, then there can be some success. Otherwise, there's no success. They're just wasting their time. That bhakti misery yoga, if that comes about, then they're actually making progress. And gradually, what we want to see is the bhakti part to increase, and the, you know, the other mixture to decrease. And actually, in the Krishna book, you know, keep in mind, of course, that the ultimate goal is for someone who has that goal from the very beginning, you know, a young man with the goal of the Supreme Lord desires very easily, but many don't have that conception. And he makes it very interesting, you know, the prayers of the Vedas personified. And in his Krishna book, Prabhupada says that the conclusion is that if a human being does not fulfill the mission of his life by worshipping the Supreme Lord and does not go back home back to Godhead, it is to be understood that he is breathing just like a blacksmith's bellows, living just like a tree, eating just like a camel, and having sex like the dogs and hogs. Thus he has been frustrated in fulfilling the specific purpose of human life. So it directly relates to this section that we're reading. So that's from the third chapter. I think 19:23 or something like that, is it? Okay. So then, you know, Parikit Maharaj in verse 22, he asks, well, tell me in detail how and where the mind has to be implied and how the conception can be fixed so that the dirty things in a person's mind can be removed. So here we see this transition from, you know, a person is unable to follow Sukadeva Goswami's instructions because there's some material impurities within the mind. Parikit Maharaj is asking, you know, for them who have that problem, what do they do? Prabhupada says in the purport, the dirty things of fruit of work,
yucky,
empiric philosophy, can be removed only by the association with the Supreme Lord. The Lord, being omnipotent, can offer his association by his inconceivable potencies. Thus, persons who are unable to pin their faith on the personal feature of the Absolute Truth are given a chance to associate with his Virata Rupa. The cosmic impersonal feature of the Lord is a feature of his unlimited potencies. Since the potent and potencies are identical, even the conception of his impersonal cosmic feature helps the conditioned soul to associate with the Lord indirectly and thus gradually rise to the stage of personal contact. So we see there, very, very nice statement. One must associate with the Lord in order to be purified. Prabhupada goes on to describe, you know, generally people with a poor fund of knowledge, they think the Lord is a common man. And for the benefit of them who can't accept the Lord in his personal feature, Maharaj Parikit is inquiring. So for their benefit. Maharaj Parikit and Sukadeva Goswami, you know, they're on the same transcendental platform, and in essence, they both want to establish Bhakti Yoga as the supreme process and Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead. So even Parikit Maharaj's questions are, you know, always leaning towards helping others who can't understand that, just always clearing the path for them with his questions. He doesn't necessarily want to practice it, that's the point. In verse 23, then Sukadeva Goswami answers that once you control the sitting posture, etc., so he goes through the different yogic, Astanga yoga mechanical processes, and with intelligence apply the mind to the gross potencies of the Lord for the Virata Rupa. It's the same as Sankhya Yoga process, but for those whose minds are too impure, for the modes of passion and ignorance, which basically gives them a materialistic and impersonal conception of the Lord, and therefore cannot properly enter Samadhi, they need to do this preliminary process to bring them to that point where they gradually have a devotional sentiment towards the personal form of the Lord, and then when they can fix their mind on the personal form of the Lord, they can perfect Samadhi and the Ashtanga Yoga process. Yeah, no, we explained that you know, for the benefit of others, he's asking. You see that this is the quality of a real spiritual master, of course, is that, you know, they're not just going to rush through to the, you know, pastimes of the gopis. Make sure that everything is scientifically understood without any doubt. You know, one is, you know, solidly fixed in self-realization, God-realization, then let us discuss the pastimes of Krishna. If one is not on that platform, one cannot fix their mind on those pastimes in a proper devotional attitude. Again, in the purport, Prabhupada makes some nice statements that the materially absorbed mind of the conditioned soul does not allow him to transcend the limit of the bodily conception of life, and thus the yoga system of meditation is prescribed in order to mould the character of the gross materialist. So, you know, many people practice in yoga and they, of course, become very proud of that, but in essence, you know, from a devotee's perspective, you know, it's for someone who's just can't get out of the bodily conception of life. You know, so he says, it's impossible for them to concentrate on thoughts of transcendence. Verse 23. Now, in his purport there, Prabhupada also alludes to the fact that some of the yogis at this point, you know, where they may be very, you know, quite elevated from a yogi's perspective, they may actually be developing some mystic cities. And still, because the materialistic bent of mind is there, they want to lord it over the world with their newly acquired, you know, materialistic abilities. And by doing that, they can't fix themselves in samadhi. They can't fix themselves in meditation on the Lord. It's basically the same modes of passion and ignorance, even at this stage of yoga, coming back to cause the same problem, except that they're thinking they're very elevated, but they're actually still in the same problem of thinking, identified in themselves as you know, a person of the material world who can enjoy the material world. It's the same mentality, they're just doing it on a higher level. Okay, so then, of course, you know, the following verses, we describe what is the Virata Rupa. Verses 24 through. Down the bottom of the purport, Prabhupada says that the Virata Rupa manifestation of the Lord is simultaneously a challenge to the atheists, you know, who want to present themselves as God or someone as God, and a favour to the assurers, who can think of the Lord as Virat and thus gradually cleanse the dirty things from their hearts in order to become qualified to actually see the transcendental form of the Lord in the near future. So he's favouring both, the assurers and the material. We looked at the graph before. Now, as we go through, we looked at the general description, how the three planetary systems, you know, constitute, you know, the Lord's, you know, legs, you know, his torso up to his head, and the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they're situated there, and how everything within the universe is actually situated somewhere or another within them. Now, as we go through, we'll look at how it actually, you know, one who's meditating upon that, how the it gradually brings a sense of God consciousness and purity in the way that they're viewing things. Because they are meditating upon God, and therefore it changes the mood from the mood of when we don't think of God, we think of ourselves as an enjoyer of the material world. But when we're seeing everything as God, it does, then we see, oh, God is here, God is there, God is there. You know, this is all God. So, you know, your behavior towards everything is more godly because you're feeling the presence of God, even though in a slightly impersonal way. It gradually purifies, and that gradually, you know, converts into a slightly devotional atmosphere. Not quite bhakti, but, you know, something. So, you see, Prabhupada says, the materialist must know for certain that his visualization of the world in a spirit of lording it over is not God realization. You know, so, certainly the yogis who are trying to enjoy their mystic potencies should understand that with that statement there, they're not God realized. Because, he says, that materialistic view of exploitation of the material resources is occasioned by the illusion of the external energy of the Lord. Now, let's look at some of the things in particular. In verse 31, it describes how his jaws of teeth are Yama, the god of death, who punishes sinners. The art of affection is his set of teeth. And the most alluring, illusory material energy is his smile. This great ocean of material creation is but the casting of his glance over us. A very nice purport, very important verse, this one. The conditioned souls who are allured by such materialism should know that the material temporary creation is simply an imitation of the reality, and that those who are captivated by such alluring glances of the Lord are put under the direction of the controller of sinners, Yamaraj. The Lord smiles affectionately, displaying his teeth. The intelligent person who can grasp these truths about the Lord becomes a soul fully surrendered unto him. There's a description, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita also, how Arjuna, when he saw the universal form, he saw that everyone was entering into the blazing mouths of the Lord, and that they were being crushed between the teeth of the Lord. And you know, one who sees the universal form would actually be able to see that every single person, even the Brahmanas, are being crushed in the teeth of the Lord. Even though the Lord, you know, his illusory energy, you know, is captivating, like the smile of the Lord. It's like the smile of a crocodile. You know, you look at a crocodile, you think, oh, that crocodile's smiling. He likes me. I'll go and pat him. What's that?
Is it easy to meditate on the form of Virasrupa?
Only if you're a devotee. Only if you have some, according to your level of bhakti, you can meditate upon the Virasrupa. Yeah, it's similar. That's right. It's you know, seeing the Lord, how He is manifest in every aspect of the material creation, and that's what we're looking at here. One should be able to. It should reveal something about God. We look at something in the material world, and that reveals something about God. If we look at a painting, it reveals something about the artist. You know? If you go to someone's home, it reveals something about the people who live there, even though you may not see them. It's like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. See, in verse 33, describing so many things, and the passing ages are His movements and His activities are the reactions of the three modes of material nature. In the purport, Prabhupada says, the personality of Godhead is not dead stone, nor is He inactive, as is poorly thought by some schools. So He moves with the progression of time. When the yogi is trying to meditate upon the Virat Rupa, and they understand that this universal form is moving, and what are His movements? That, in the progression of time, that is the movements of the Virata Rupa. So He's not dead, He's not inactive, He's alive. So again, it is when we look at the Virata Rupa as a whole or in part, we should see something of the nature of the Lord. Gradually, we get an impression of the Lord which is different to our impersonal sense. Nothing is unknown to Him. If the Virata Rupa is past, present and future, the manifestation of everything past, present and future, what could be unknown to Him? Not a blade of grass moves without His sanction. This is another conception we would develop by meditating upon the Virat Rupa. Everything is moving according to how God as the Virat Rupa moves. And if He doesn't move, nothing moves. Not a blade of grass moves. In verse 36 in the purport, Prabhupada says, how can He be impersonal? Because it is saying that the musical rhythm represents the musical sense of the Lord. So if we're meditating, can someone ask that tapper to stop tapping? Where is Marty? If the universal form contains a sense of music and artistic sense, they're qualities that you find in a person. Therefore, we're starting to, must be able to see that this universal form cannot be entirely impersonal in its makeup. Where does a musical sense, where does an artistic sense fit in to a non-person? If it's there in the Virata Rupa, there is personality present. The Virata Rupa comprises the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Sudras. It means that everyone is within the form of the Lord. It means everyone has a relationship with the Lord, which means everyone has a duty towards the Lord. Therefore, everyone has a duty to perform sacrifices to please the Lord. Doesn't matter whether you're Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra. Somehow or another, collectively, you should be engaged in pleasing the Lord. It's not something just for the Brahmanas or the Kshatriyas like that. As Prabhupada says in the purport, that monotheism is practically suggested here. In essence, if we take the conception of the Virata Rupa as one complete form, it also brings in the conception of one complete God with maybe subordinate manifestations. So it's also pushing one towards the conception of one God, because all the varieties of demigods are actually included within the form of the one God. So in this way, if we look through the various statements, we can see that how pure become gradually God conscious, a little bit more personal in their way of thinking towards God, and that helps them then to have more faith in the personal conception of God and have less impurities in their mind and heart, and that makes them more qualified to actually perform Astanga Yoga and to fix their mind upon the Lord. And therefore, verse 38, the first chapter, Sukadeva Goswami says, one who seriously desires liberation concentrates his mind on this form of the Lord. Ultimately, one is not fixing the mind on the Lord, one is concerned and cause his own degradation. That's the statement of Sukadeva Goswami in verse. In other words, one should not think that fixing his mind on enjoying the various cities, mystic cities or opulences, or benefits from the yoga is the goal. The goal is fixing mind upon the Lord. And if one doesn't, one will be allured by the various benefits that come from one's process. The second chapter is also significant. There's a couple of verses, 13 and 14, in the second chapter. But we know that Sukadeva Goswami said that one should meditate upon the form of the Lord, beginning from the feet, gradually rising. As one is able to fix one's mind on a certain feature of the Lord, beginning from the feet, gradually rising. As one is, capable, this is the proper process, gradually, rising up, whether we're meditating on the Virata Rupa or whether we're meditating upon the Paramatma. Interesting for us, of course, also because the Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be the form of the Lord, and we also meditate upon the first two cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Gradually rising, one should not immediately jump to the 10th canto, which is considered the smiling face of the Lord, especially the part dealing with the gopis. Prabhupada gives a very solid warning in this. Now, very nice purport here. In verse 13, Prabhupada says that those who are too engrossed in sense gratification cannot be allowed to participate in archana or to touch the transcendental form of Radha Krishna or Vishnu deities. For them it is better to meditate upon the gigantic Rātarūpa. The impersonalists and the voiders are therefore recommended to meditate upon the universal form of the Lord, whereas the devotees are recommended to meditate on the deity worship in the temple. So though it's not easy to meditate upon the deity, because the impersonalists are not pure, they will commit many, many offences, and therefore, you know, the brahmanas, in essence, may discourage them. You know, don't allow people who are materially, you know, impure to touch the deities or to, you know, deal with them directly. Then they're actually, you know, better to meditate upon the impersonal Rātarūpa. So as again, you know, you see books like Yogananda Paramahamsa, the autobiography of a yogi. People glorify, you know, that he's a great yogi and what have you. But again, from a devotee's perspective, we'd be thinking, well, because he's not sufficiently purified to, you know, come and do deity worship, therefore he's, you know, has to perform some other lesser process. There's still some credit, you know, there, but from a devotee's perspective, it's, you know, from the materialistic perspective, he's a great Mahajan. You know, from a devotee's perspective, very, very neophyte on the path of, you know, devotion, on the path of spiritual realization, God's realization. You see how, you know, understanding this section of Srimad Bhagavatam puts all the yogis and the bogies and the so-called incarnations all in their place. So, whether one is approaching the deity of the Lord, meditating upon the Rātarūpa, or meditating upon the Srimad Bhagavatam, the idea is that one meditates beginning from the lotus feet to the degree that one's intelligence is purified, and then, you know, according to the purity of one's consciousness, that meditation on that part of the Lord's form will become effective, and then, you know, feeling that sense of purification and advancement, one can then elevate oneself to meditate upon the next level of the Lord's form. So it's interesting, you know, we discussed the other day that there's a statement that the universal form, Prabhupada says in several places, that it's somewhat imaginary, because, you know, that form of the Lord does not exist permanently in the spiritual sky. And as the material world is actually wound up, the Rātarūpa is also wound up. It's a temporary manifestation within the material world. Although it is still considered to be one of the incarnations of the Lord, and it's not imaginary in the sense that no one's actually seeing it, because we know that when Arjuna saw the spiritual form, that many of the demigods in heaven were also able to see what Arjuna was seeing. So that confirmed that they were, Arjuna wasn't just seeing something in his imagination, it was actually there, and others saw the same. But it's imaginary in the sense that one should not think that that's the eternal form of the Lord as he's situated in the spiritual world. The interesting thing, of course, is that for those who are impersonalists, they actually consider that the Lord's actual form, especially that of Krishna, to be the imaginary manifestation. There are many people who meditate upon the Virata Rupa, following, you know, Paramahamsa Yogananda and what have you, and they feel that Krishna is a manifestation from the Virata Rupa, as a subordinate feature of the Virata Rupa, and is more or less, you know, imaginary. Therefore, they will, you know, also sometimes quote the Bhagavad Gita, but they have a whole different attitude as to where the rest of the Bhagavad Gita fits in. So then the Virata Rupa is the main feature of the Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna is a subordinate feature, an imaginary subordinate feature. Yeah, they would relate that to the Virata Rupa. They're inconsistent in they have a poor fund of knowledge, so they can't properly they can't consistently understand the verses of the Bhagavad Gita in relationship to each other, to the whole conversation. What, the original Sai Baba or the latter one? Yeah, I think he comes under the class of a pedophile. Others, I'm not sure.
What about Sri Aurobindo? Were they claiming Krishna or aspects of
Krishna? Misleading people greatly, and they have not even the beginning understanding of Bhagavad Gita. Most of them actually do not have even the beginning, elementary, first understanding of Bhagavad Gita. What to speak of, you know, the more confidential parts.
By the way, Satyasaiba calls himself
Bhagavan. Yeah. We have other names for him.
Bhagavan is going on a wheelchair now.
What's that?
The so-called Bhagavan is going on a wheelchair now.
Wheelchair.
Ah, the wheelchair, yeah.
You never seen Krishna on a wheelchair.
Yeah. Prabhupada mentions in the second chapter, verse 14, that those are impersonalists, they're actually unable to render service to the Lord, and therefore they're advised to meditate on his Virata Rupa. Chapter 5 also, there's some verses very similar that describe the Virata Rupa, and, you know, from that we can understand again. How it elevates one to perceive the presence of the Lord in a personal way. So one can look at those purports and, you know, chapter 5, you can understand from the purport there, Prabhupada says that no one within the universe is without a relationship with the Lord. You know, of all the planetary systems and everyone on it, within the Virata Rupa, then gradually that yogi would be thinking, well, every single person has a relationship with the Lord. So, you know, these are all gradually helping one to purify one's consciousness. Now, in chapter 6, there are also some verses, we won't go through them all, between, you know, 1 to 17, we won't go through any, in fact. But, I'll just say this, that the chapter is called Purusha Shukta Confirmed. Purusha Shukta is a very famous Vedic prayer to the Lord Vishnu, explaining that, in essence, Everything in the world is non-different from the Lord. The Lord is the supreme cause of the material world. The Lord is beyond the material world. There's one of the verses in chapter 6 describes that the Lord is, you know, everything within the material world, but he exceeds it by 10 fingers, or, you know, he's just a little bigger than. So everything is situated within the Lord, but he exceeds it by a certain small amount. It's not actually giving a dimension of the Lord, but just explaining that he is, you know, more than what's in the universe. That's all these different concepts are explained in the Purusha Sukta, and basically Maharaj Sukadeva Goswami's prayers and his description of the Virata Rupa Sukadeva Goswami is reciting the prayers of Lord Brahma to Narada Muni, and those prayers are confirming the Vedic prayers of the Purusha Sukta. So what's in the Srimad Bhagavatam confirms exactly the prayers of the Vedas. So the Purusha Sukta, in essence, it expanses the Vedas. It's such an important prayer. The Purusha Sukta expanses the Vedic knowledge, and all the concepts there, where it explains the Lord, you know, is the source of creation, non-different from it being his energy, everything like that. All those concepts are described exactly here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it confirms the Vedas as not different from it. So it's Purusha Sukta confirmed. Devotees have an expanded understanding of the Purusha Sukta, you know, the essential understanding of the Purusha Sukta, that, you know, the Lord is the cause of the material creation, is transcendental to it, and non-different from it, being because it's his material energy. We understand all those things, but more, because then we have a more intimate understanding of who that Lord is. So for most people, their understanding stops there with Mahavishnu. But for us, we understand, that's just the beginning, because Mahavishnu is just an expansion of Narayan. There's another whole, and we have that information, and we understand Narayan's expansion from Krishna. We have that information, which is not, you know, detailed. So, you know, the information from Srimad Bhagavatam confirms the Purusha Sukta, and that just gives, you know, so much more transcendental knowledge, which is very, very relishable. Oh, learn it by heart. Yeah, when we worship the Shalagrams, we recite 16 essential verses of the Purusha Sukta for each 16 items that are being offered. So when we worship Radha Krishna the deity in our temple, our main worship goes through the Shalagram, what's his name? Trivikram. Uh-huh. And therefore, it's more difficult, more time consuming to do all the bathing, what have you, for the deities. It's all done for the small deities. 16 times with the 16 verses of the Purusha Sukta done every day. And so that's done on behalf of everyone in the temple. I think there's more. I think there's 16 principal verses. I think there's more from what I understand. Okay. So right, so we've understood the role of the Visvarupa, Virata Rupa. And now we come back to the topic of Paramatma Darsan, or meditating upon the Super Soul. For those who have become purified, they've either been able to take up that instruction firsthand, or if they haven't, they've taken up the preliminary process of meditating on the Virata Rupa and then gradually come back to that. So in chapter 2 we looked at meditating upon the form of Paramatma. Verses 8 to 12. Following that, 13 and 14, described how one is not quite fit for that, can meditate upon the Virata Rupa. Coming back to, I'm going to summarise, I want to cover this. What happens next is that one of the Purva Swadhyaya questions, question 5, is briefly describe the yogic process of leaving the body when one likes, and why does this process supersede chosen times in the Bhagavad Gita? Looking at verses 15 to 21 of the second chapter. Most of that is actually answered in verse 15, that devotees don't need to seek an opportune moment to leave the present body. Only those who are mixed devotees, alloyed with fruitive action or empirical philosophical speculation, require an opportune moment for quitting the body. Yep.
I think it's other way. We are not seeing the particular time. We are waiting for Krishna to come in front of him.
He did leave at a particular time. He did wait for that particular time. You know, sometimes the devotees are performing activities literally to set the example, you know, for others. It may not have actually been necessary for him, but, you know, he was still, we can understand that he was the absolute topmost perfect yogi, because he was able to just determine the time that he could leave his body. I mean, you know, that one has to be very, very elevated in yoga to be able to do that.
But the more important thing is that
seen that. More than that, he was not interested in that. He wanted to just serve Krishna.
Yes.
And Krishna was directly relating to him to fulfill his vow. So that is even above all those. Krishna had come there. We could see Krishna. So that is all above all those times and everything.
In essence, there are a variety of different things, such as, Krishna can show that his devotees are, fully equipped with all the yogic siddhis and what have you. There are a variety of things there that you can do that. But we can come back to that in more detail. In chapter 2, basically verses 15 to 21 describe the immediate process of becoming liberated at the time of death. And texts 22 to 31 describe the gradual process. So 15 to 21 is the immediate process of becoming liberated. 22 to 31, the gradual process. I'm going to quickly summarize that. Alright, and this is part of our answering that Purva Svadvaya question 5. Describing the yogic process by which the one can leave the body when he likes. And this process also leads to three different types of perfections, which we'll also discuss. So this ties in with the original questions that Parikshit Maharaj asked. In verses 37 and 38 of the 19th chapter, Canto 1, Parikshit Maharaj said, verse 37, "You are the spiritual master of great saints and devotees. I am therefore begging you to show the way of perfection." This is actually a four-part question. What is the way of perfection for all persons? And especially for those who are about to die. So there's two parts there. In verse 38, "Please let me know what a man should hear, chant, remember and worship, and also what he should not do." Right. Four parts in. What he should not do is answered in the first chapter, verses 2 to 4. And we discussed about persons who are too materially engrossed. The envious householder. Right? Sex indulgence at night and... yeah, that's it. Maintaining the families. sleeping, making money in the day, devoid of atmatattva, too attached to the fallible soldiers, right? Even though they've sufficiently experienced, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. That is what not to fix the mind upon by way of hearing, chanting, thinking. That answers what he should not do. What he should not hear about, chant about, remember. Which is first chapter, first canto, chapter 19, verse 38. Second canto, chapter 1, verses 2 to 4. Now, the second part of that same text 38 of the question, what should he hear, chant, remember, is answered in chapter 1, text 5. One who desires to be free from all miseries must hear about, glorify, and also remember the personality of the Godhead, who is the super soul, the controller, and saviour from all miseries. It's also in the second chapter, in verse 36, he says the same thing at the end of this chapter. It is therefore essential that every human being hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. Now, the other, in text 37, he asks, show the way of perfection for all, especially for one who is about to die. In other words, what's the duty of one who is about to die? In this chapter, basically from verses 15 to 21, and then 23 to 31, he's answering that. Right, we've discussed this process of meditating upon the Lord. I'll just say it again. The question is, basically, what is the duty of a person about to die? Text number 37. The answer is given twofold. One is, there's a method of yoga leading to immediate liberation, which is verses 15 to 21, and there's a yoga leading to gradual liberation, which is verses 22 to 31. That answers the question of what a person is supposed to do. What are they supposed to do? They're supposed to, you know, control the mind, the senses, withdraw it from material activities, and fix the mind upon the Lord. And we've discussed that whole Astanga yoga and Virata Rupa as different methods of coming to that platform. Sukadeva Goswami said originally that the best way to do that is just sit down, chant Hare Krishna, and recite the Srimad Bhagavatam, etc., etc. For those who can't do that, he's given other preliminary processes. But we should know that the answer to the final part, as to in verse 37, show the way of perfection. So what is the ultimate perfection? And the answer is given in verse 37 of this second chapter, that those who drink through oral reception, fully filled with a nectarian message. In other words, they're taking up that instruction of verse 5 in the first chapter, right? To always hear and chant. Those who do that, the message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of devotees, they purify the polluted aim of life, known as material enjoyment, and thus go back to Godhead, the lotus feet of the Supreme Person of Godhead. That is the perfection. How is it achieved? By hearing and chanting about the right things and not the wrong things. If one cannot do that, then, you know, you follow the other preliminary processes that bring you to that point, or you can follow them in itself and you'll get liberation. But if you follow Sukadeva Goswami's actual instruction, you get more than liberation. That's prema, and you go. You won't just get liberation. You'll actually get prema bhakti. You go back to the Krishna Loka. What's that?
At the moment,
yes.
It's going to tell everybody.
Yes.
Yes. That's the main process.
That's the main process. And the primary too. It's actually in this age of Kali, it's the only way. So in other words, Sukadeva Goswami is giving Briket Maharaj, he's telling him that this is the ultimate goal of all Vedic knowledge, which is to go back to Godhead, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and develop your love for the Supreme Lord. And that is only achieved through Bhakti Yoga, with a stress on hearing and chanting, remembering of the various nine items. And that it's not just a process for Kali Yuga. That is actually the ultimate instruction of the Vedas, and he confirms that by Lord Krishna's teaching to Brahma, Brahma's teachings to Narada, Vyasa's teachings to Sugya, so, you know, all confirming the same thing. So it's not just for Kali, that is the ultimate teaching of the Vedas. We're not just doing that because in Kali Yuga we can't do anything else. We're also doing it because it's actually the best, the easiest, it leads to the supreme goal. In essence, it's incidental that we can't do anything else, because in Kali Yuga other processes are not viable for Kali Yugaites. But that just makes it all the more beneficial that although it's the supreme process, it can actually even be performed in Kali Yuga. And therefore, at the end of the 12th canto, Sukadeva Goswami says, therefore we see that Kali Yuga has this wonderful benefit that, you know, you can perform this chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in Kali Yuga, which, you know, although it was available in other yugas, people may not be inclined towards it, being bewildered by their abilities to follow other Vedic processes. So, you know, yes, and the Lord has given us that ability to do that, especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Yuga avatar will come in Kali Yuga and get people to chant, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got us to be absorbed in Krishna Kirtan. So Kirtan is the highest, you know, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam is the highest process recommended, the easiest, the safest for everyone in all times in the Vedas, and it gives the highest goal more quickly. But then in comparative, there are different levels of Kirtan, and Krishna Kirtan is even, you know, more rare and gives more relishable and gives a higher goal, and that's available in this particular Kali Yuga. Yes. Yeah. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, then yes, one more benefit is that Lord Chaitanya came to just make it even easier by, you know, showing how to do it and just being so merciful. So that's pretty much it. I just want to say one thing. I haven't said enough. Yes. I just want to explain very quickly in a couple of sentences the difference between liberation immediately and liberation by the slow process. The slow process is that the yogi gradually goes to the various planets, you know, higher and higher and higher up to Brahmaloka, and becomes purified bit by bit on the way, and eventually goes back to Godhead at the end of Brahma's life along with Brahma, if Brahma goes back to Godhead, of course. The other yogi does not actually have to wait to the end of Brahma's life. They can actually go back to Godhead immediately. They become successful in fixing their mind upon the personality of Godhead. That's the main difference, and you can look at those in those verses I mentioned. Alright, so we'll just leave it there. If everyone can have a look at chapters 3 and 4 for next week, a lot easier next week. There's not as much. We went through a lot today and last week, but the next few lessons are not so jam-packed. But I didn't really want to break it up, and because we have a lot of I don't see us for a couple of weeks, I wanted to get something substantial in, and you can read up about that and the third and fourth chapters. Who's already read the third and fourth chapters? Yeah, good, everybody. That's good. Yeah, that's great.